Welcome, everybody. We're going to get started. This is our last module. We have one more meeting after this, but this is essentially the last part of the fall cohort. We're glad that you all made it here. We are going to be talking about the panel presentation. We have two panel presentation practices sessions this evening. So we are, and I'm Michael Henry, your technical facilitator for the APR online study course. Now, so we're getting towards the end here. So now's a great time to really take an assessment of where you are. Have you set your target date for to take the examination? Is it coming up soon? Type into the chat window. Let us know if you've got the examination coming up in the next couple of weeks. You have the panel presentation coming up in the next couple of weeks. Go ahead and just type that into the chat window. And one of the other things that we encourage you to do regularly is to do a KSA self-assessment and figure out where you are in terms of the KSAs and your confidence in passing the APR examination. So the panel presentation, we'll talk a little bit about the panel presentation tonight. The panel presentation tests for things that can't be done on the computer-based examination. So it's about also understanding the process of RPI, communication planning, but it's also being able to talk and extemporaneously answer questions. So we'll have a little bit of that this evening. And this session, for those of you who have already taken the panel presentation, this session is still highly important because we're going to dig into also those planning components that will really help you on the APR examination as well. We have a lot of tips, and we're going to get some tips from our panel in just a moment to study for the panel presentation. It's important to really, and we recommend studying the KSAs first before doing the panel presentation. There are many chapters that will ask you to do your panel presentation first. We flip that, and we want you to study and be really prepared to understand all of the KSAs before you do your panel presentation. And also, in the online study course, you don't have to even apply to set up your questionnaire and to set up your practice and to really know what you're doing with your panel presentation before you even apply for your APR. So you can practice with us, you can refine, and you can talk about your panel presentation with your coach or your mentor or with your study partner, and really think about best practices as you go forward. So we do recommend that you do your panel presentation at the end of studying all of the KSAs. So that's why we have the panel presentation in module 10 of the APR online study course. And also, for those of you who are in this session and you're thinking to yourself, gosh, I've had a really hard time keeping up with all of these sessions, the important thing is to really relax and realize that this is a marathon, not a sprint. We have three cohort sessions each year, and you are invited to come to any one of them or all of them, or to study on your own. They're an opt-in group. And so we have the spring cohort coming up soon. You'll be notified of that and invited to those webinars. You can opt out of those webinars if you'd like. And as Fern Bonamy says, we want you to become facile in your ability to talk about the KSAs and the planning components. So speaking of being facile, we've got two APR facile speakers. Joan, welcome. I'm glad you're back. Oh, Joan, you
Hi,
are.
Hi, Michael.
There you are.
Yes, I'm muted. Hi, it's great to be back. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
And Kimberly Carroll, we're really happy that you're back as well. Welcome back.
Thank you. Lovely to be back as well.
And Kimberly, why don't we start with you just briefly? You heard just a few tips on the panel presentation, and I realize we'll be talking about that through the entire session, but do you have a couple of sort of tips for doing the panel presentation? What are your tips?
I echo your recommendations to really make sure that you understand all the KSAs before going into your panel presentation. And even before you start your questionnaire, of course, as well. And I think by having a good grasp of your KSAs as you write your questionnaire and as you prepare for your panel presentation, it will help you study for the test itself as you start to kind of implement and try to think about how the KSAs are working through your own efforts. And it will also help you to anticipate some of the questions that your panelists or your evaluators may have, because they are all going to relate back to the KSA. And the other thing that I would say too, as Michael shared, is to relax. You know, I think everyone around the table, they're going to be there to encourage you, to help you through their process. They're not there to look down on you. They really want you to succeed. And so even if you have your presentation, even if you're presenting something that doesn't follow exactly what you've learned through this process, because you did the project before, you started learning all the KSAs and what elements you really need for a project to be successful, a public relations initiative to be successful. It's also your opportunity to say, we did this, but knowing what I know now, I would make this recommendation, or I would have done this. It is that kind of, it's that casual, and it also allows you to be very reflective upon your work in a positive way, because we're always learning, right? We're always evaluating, and that's a key part of RPI, right? So, and it just shows that you don't have to go in with a perfect product, and you don't have to try to shoehorn something, an initiative that you did, into a neat RPI process if that's not what you did. You want to be genuine and authentic and honest, quite frankly, about what you accomplished and what you did, and use what you've learned to help to help share what you learned and what you would do again moving forward. So I hope that's helpful, and just knowing that it doesn't all have to be perfect, you know, your initiative, what you've done, but you have to show that you understand the KSAs well enough to evaluate your own work. And as you think about moving forward, you have the KSAs in mind in order to improve your work going forward.
Excellent, Kimberly. And Joan, I don't know if you've had the honor really to be on a panel for a panel presentation yet. Have you done that?
Yeah, I have actually. It was really, that was a good experience too, is being on the other side of things. And I have to say what Kimberly said she brings up a very good and important point, is your project, they're not evaluating your project for was it successful or not, because it isn't so much about whether you achieved success, and obviously, you know, you want to be successful, but it's really about how well you were able to follow the RPI process. And even if your project didn't initially follow it because you were still learning or you hadn't known about the process before you undertook your project, that's okay, because you can plug in where you did follow the project. Even if you started with strategies and tactics or just tactics, you can sort of take a look at how you could have applied RPI in that. So I think that's important to note. And another thing I saw, I think Holly mentioned in the chat about the application itself. And this also goes back to something that Michael continues to reinforce in us, is this is a journey. Each milestone you achieve is part of a longer journey. Some people take longer, some take shorter, but I mean, it is more of a long-term, a minimum 8 month plus journey. So give yourselves credit. You're here studying and you're on the journey. You're on this phase of the journey. The next part of the journey, the panel presentation and application, those take time to prepare. It's more than putting down your name and address and what you want to be when you grow up. It's really about projects you've worked on, how you feel about the PR profession, maybe some ways you've helped others in the PR profession. And that's part one of the application. Then there's part two of the application, which really becomes then your panel presentation. So everything you do is integrated, but take your time and do it right and follow the steps that we're providing here. Learn the KSAs and apply them to your panel presentation, and you will be successful.
Excellent. Great. And we're going to get comments from both Kimberly and Joan as we go forward. We do, as we mentioned, we do encourage you to do the panel presentation after you study your KSAs. On the examination, the computer-based examination, remember that there are 132 questions. 37 of them are unscored. So if you see a question that really throws you off, don't let that throw you off. Just mark it and skip it, because it might be a beta question. It might not even be scored. There are 82 questions that must be scored correctly. And also, we do recommend that you study all the KSAs. We'll say it over and over again, and because many people do their panel presentation, they say, done with that. I'm not going back to that. But the truth is it's part of the culmination of your study of the KSAs rather than just the beginning. So actually, we've got two great panel presentations. We're going to jump into one, and then we'll get some feedback from our panel. Rakim, are you there?
I'm here.
Excellent. And I will follow along and go ahead and share your panel presentation. But first, let me share with everyone that we don't want you to passively listen to Rakim's presentation. And Rakim, I'm hoping that you close the chat window so you don't see the chat messages. And the reason for that is because I'd like you to focus on your presentation. But those of you listening, I want you to share some what you thought saw in Rakim's presentation that worked, what you saw that may need some help. And I will send those comments to Rakim after he shares the presentation. So go ahead, Rakim, with this.
All right, thank you for the introduction. This is the family planning plan that I put together at the Virginia Department of Health. And our goal here for the plan was to increase awareness of long-acting reversible contraception in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And so this is, you know, what we set out to do. And so I have some of the graphics that we created for social media on the front slide. We can move to the next slide, please. So this is my situational analysis. In September 2017, the communications team at the Virginia Department of Health Office of Family Health Services was approached by the Family Planning Program Director to raise awareness about family planning resources, particularly for long-acting reversible contraception in Virginia. The team developed the What's Your Plan VA, an ad hoc campaign, funded by a $75,000 federal grant by Title X. The campaign focused its efforts on 9 health districts that saw increasingly low family planning visits. Geographically, each location was very different in its demographics. The health district directors mutually agreed to a narrow target audience for a universal campaign. It was also abundantly apparent that teenage pregnancy was on a steep decline, and so this was not the audience the health department was interested in engaging. The creative team faced an approaching expiration of funds with no guarantee of renewable funding sources. The campaign launched in April 2018 and concluded in June 2018. So this was my goal, to position Virginia Department of Health as a trusted healthcare provider, which provides affordable reproductive health care and access to long-acting reversible contraception, a LARC, in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And so one of the key words in my goal is trusted. When you are serving as a government agency providing health awareness, it's so important to establish a level of trust when providing such a service. And so the goal has to align also with our mission statement, which is the mission of the Virginia Department of Health is to protect the health and promote the well-being of all people in Virginia. The agency's vision statement is to become the healthiest, healthiest state in the nation, sorry. We can move to the next slide. So we didn't have a lot of time to do really, really thorough research. And so the primary research that I had access to was the patient health district data from an internal database that pretty much gave me a scope of who we were serving. We also did some in-depth interviews. And so what we did was we developed an interview schedule and we called a lot of the 9 health districts. We talked to some of the directors and also the first line workers to figure out exactly what the actual patient encountered when they came into a local health district. For secondary research, I looked at a lot of the materials that we had already created and what was already being distributed. So that was my environmental scan or monitoring. I also looked at case studies from other health departments and their marketing campaigns. And I also pulled some US Census record data to be able to help me figure out, you know, what my demographics look like in each of these health districts. And so this is what I learned from that database that I mentioned on my previous slide. 9,034 visitors were female between the ages of 20 to 24. These are the largest numbers that I have listed. 15,789 identified themselves as white. 26,202 visitors were at or below the federal poverty line. 30,778 visitors were also uninsured, and 12,460 visitors preferred oral contraception, which is a daily method, which is completely different to, than what we were actually promoting. And this came from our Title 10, a Title 10 report. And so what I would do if I had the opportunity to spend some more time and resource and some of that budget on some primary research, I would actually look into the patient experience. I also want to know what, why is reproductive health visits on the decline at the Virginia Department of Health? And what is our perception? How do people view the Virginia Department of Health as a health provider? And so here I have a little mistake, so please excuse me. Focus group is actually a informal research method, and that should probably be listed differently. But I would do some focus groups, as well as anonymous mail surveys to some of the people who are already trafficked into the health districts. Next slide, please. And so this is my ideal target audience, Virginia women who live in rural areas between the ages of 19 and 39 who are sexually active, uninsured or underemployed, and seeking short-term or long-term pregnancy prevention methods. And so these are my publics. I have listed out here internal and external. In the Commonwealth of Virginia, we serve everyone. So everyone is an unofficial spokesperson about the opportunities available at the Virginia Department of Health. The VDH contractors, these people are not offered benefits from the state of Virginia. We also have per diem workers, also not offered benefits or are already offered limited benefits. And so the channel to reach these people would be through our intranet and email. I don't have that listed, but I should. External, our consumers, those who are already using our services, nonprofit referral agencies, the medical community, prospective consumers, college students who are also uninsured, the senior and the elderly. These are the people who have daughters and sons and are connected to people. So it's really a latent audience, but I still feel like they have a place in this, in sharing resources about what is available at the Virginia Department of Health. Next slide, please. So I use the communications process model, I would change a few things. Ideally, I would have set an agenda in all of these communities to be able to establish why and how LARCs are available in their area. But this is what we did. We actually pretty much were the source of information, and we were just trying to get to an end goal without necessarily having feedback sent back to us. And so what we did was largely in a broad marketing push, and what we might also refer to as a spray and pray campaign. Next slide, please. So here are my objectives. My first objective is actually an outcome objective, and that objective is to increase family planning visits in low traffic health districts by 20% by June 2018 with the use of a statewide mass media campaign. Next slide, please. My next slide is output. And I know that we would like to be in the middle somewhere at the outtake position. So here is what I actually wrote up. Raise awareness with radio ads that will reach at least 100,000 impressions between April and June 2018. Ideally, I would rewrite that and I would actually say something to the effect of increase word of mouth referrals by X percent by June 2018. I don't have a baseline. We don't know that information, but if we were to be able to create a survey, would we be able to capture that before the survey and then do a follow-up post-survey to be able to see if we were actually on target for that proposed objective? Next slide, please. Attract more than 150,000 billboard impressions between April and June 2018 by placement in targeted health district communities. Again, if I had the opportunity to create an outtake objective, if I had the research, I would actually write that to say something similar to increase knowledge of affordable LARCs to part-time contractor per diem VDH staff by X percent by June 2018. Again, there is no baseline here, and I would have to probably work with HR to share that qualitative data, study. And also, I would have to launch that prior to my actual deployment of tactics and also at the end. And so, next slide, please. And also, we did a paid social media push. And so objective four was through paid social media sponsorship, post on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, reach 100,000 targeted Virginians between April 2018 and June 2018. And so here, obviously, again, another output objective is probably not the best way to approach a campaign like this, but this is what I actually did at the onset of actually developing my campaign, knowing the time constraints, also knowing my limitations. Next slide, please. And here are my key messages. Decisions made today can impact your life tomorrow. You have options to be in control of your reproductive health, quality of care at the local health department, and it's affordable. And it's not free, although it might be free for some people. But it is on a sliding scale, depending on your income and your situation, it varies. So that's not something that we actually wanted to promote. Okay, and so next slide, please. So here are my tactics and strategies. Next slide. So we developed an infographic. The infographic was developed or created by a graphic designer. And so our strategy was to share this document with the 12 non-VDH health agencies that we provided grants to. They were partners with the VDH grant for this LARC distribution. And so our target audience here was women in rural Virginia between the ages of 18 to 39, VDH health clinic users and or patients of strategic partners. Next slide. We did billboards and our strategy here, which might not seem like a strategy, but it very much was to hire media partners to distribute our billboards throughout Virginia. They had a 3-to-1 ratio, and that was our return on investment. We could have gone with an actual billboard company, but we wouldn't have been able to get that large distribution that they were able to provide to us. And also, another benefit to using them was they had an abandoned billboard program. So we even got longer and more lasting impressions on some of those vacant billboards. We also did radio ads. We developed a script for radio distribution, and we used the same script and developed an animated video to go on the newly revised webpage and for social media. The emphasis for the radio ads was to basically emphasize Pop 100 and country radio music stations, since this was a part of our targeted audience. And so this was for the women in rural parts of Virginia between ages 18 to 29. Thank you. Okay. And so we developed the social media toolkit And that was some of the, you saw some of that in the actual opening slide. And so our graphic designers in-house helped us to create the artwork for the campaign. We gave them, you know, guidance to create a gaming theme, which was very creative to be able to get some people's attention on a billboard, very bright jewel tone colors, which you see on my PowerPoint slides. And for Facebook, we took advantage of Facebook stories. We also boosted our posts on Facebook and Instagram. And we also had organic campaign messages that went out through a very established VDH account. So VDH LiveWell, as well as our Virginia WIC pages, had a very established audience. And so we pushed our messages there as well. Thank you. And also we did something new. For the first time, we took advantage of Snapchat as a tactic. We created an editorial calendar of special events in the local areas. This was something that we did in collaboration with the health districts to be able to find out exactly what was going on in their areas that drew large groups of people, specifically groups of people that fit into our demographic. And so that was our strategy, which is to focus on, you know, special events and community colleges in the areas. We also readied our website. And so we definitely did some revisions, some updates to be able to get people's attention once we actually launched the campaign. And that took quite a bit of time working with our expert staff. And so also for the website, we took advantage of a vanity URL, which was for the billboards and all of the print communications. We wanted to be able to have something that was short, snappy, and that would be able to get people immediately to our website. If you know anything about working in government, you have a very long domain handle. And so that wasn't something that we thought would be effective in promoting our newly revised website. Next slide, please. And so here's the planning. It's not one of those great Gantt charts, but this is pretty much how we were able to keep ourselves organized. And so in the planning phase, we did, I did my research, that was me. We did a pitch to our team. So you see pitch here, and that is pretty much for, you know, working with the 9 local health districts. We had to present this and sell them the idea that this was going to actually work for them with the time that we had. Our timeline is it's different. In government, you have a certain amount of time to actually deploy tactics, spend your money, and actually you have to move toward that timeline. Otherwise, the money just vanishes. And so in that same timeline between the mid-September date when I actually got the information about the campaign to our October meeting, I had to have already developed this communications plan and sell it to those 9 health district directors. And so after that was approved, I created a RAP, which is pretty much government language, which some of you may or may not understand, but yeah, pretty much I had to get all the approval chain to say sign off on all the things that I was proposing that we spend on. I had to get that vendor for, MPI Media Partners Incorporated. It's just a bunch of different things that I actually had to do prior to actually being able to go into my timeline in the spring. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Oh, this is it, I'm sorry. So here we are in the implementation phase. So April to June was my timeline. So my billboards were actually flighted. Billboards are very expensive and you don't necessarily always get the best, it's probably not the most exact way to be able to measure your outcomes for that, but we flighted our billboards in the 9 different health districts to make sure that they got coverage exactly where we wanted them to be seen. And so, you know, within that 2 or 3 month window, the actual billboard would be sited in one location. And again, going back to my earlier strategy of the vacant billboard program, those billboards actually stayed until someone else came along to buy up those billboards, which could probably still be up in certain areas at the moment. We developed our animated video, we did digital ads and web banners, we created social media graphics during this time, we launched our social media campaign, and we also established the design for the billboards. I purchased the vanity URL, and we also started to air some of those, or we started to write the scripts for those radio ads that I mentioned earlier. And so for the evaluation phase, what you'll notice here is that I didn't do a really great job of listening throughout. I actually tried that, but I wasn't able to get the information from the health districts. The information came to me all at once the fiscal year had ended. And this is where they had to actually report to the federal government about the results on their campaign. And so here, I got my report back from media partners. I was looking at the website analytics, the Facebook analytics, Twitter analytics, also Snapchat provides set those analytics for you. And then I had to actually compile all this information into a report to give to our local health district director. And so how did I do? So for objective one, to increase family planning visits by 20% in low traffic health districts by June 2018, I compared those figures with previous year's visits. Two health districts actually decreased, one health district spiked at 15%. The average increase was 5% per health district. So it was not effective at all. And objective two, to attract more than 150,000 billboard impressions between April and July 2018. And objective three, raise awareness with radio ads that will reach at least 100,000 media impressions between April and June 2018. My measurement was we actually got 586,967 people to be exposed to the campaign. And so again, working with that that vendor, we were able to get access to the Nielsen report and also the daily traffic estimates to be able to see whether or not we met our targets, and we did. Next slide, please. And so through paid social media sponsorship, posts on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, reached 100,000 targeted Virginians between March and June 2018. I'm sorry, this date is wrong. The measurement actually came to 277,171 Facebook views, 481,433 Twitter impressions, and we got 14,123 website views. Now, I will say this, because these are not outtake objectives, this is probably not the best campaign overall, not the ideal campaign, but I think, and this is a rough draft, this is very rough. I have not also scheduled my my panel review, but I'm going to be tweaking a lot of this before I actually get to that point. So I just wanted to get as much feedback while I'm in the process of development and addressing many of the issues in my presentation. Thank you.
That's great. Okay, so one of the things we always try to emphasize is that you very likely will be able to breeze through your panel presentation with that kind of presentation, but there are always little tweaks that you should consider. So let's have a little conversation now. Why don't we start with Joan? Joan, did you see anything in there you'd like to comment on?
Yes, I did. Rakim, you did a great job, and no need to apologize because we like it rough. That's the way it's supposed to be because that's what we learn from. If you came in with a perfect presentation, we would all be overwhelmed by the perfection. So this gives us an opportunity to learn from you and with you. So one of the things that I saw that would look like it was missing your problem statement. So when you go back up to the top, take a look at that. I put it in the notes in the chat. It's very important after you do your situational analysis. And as I was reading through your situational analysis, it appeared as though there was a problem statement buried in there. I think it was like toward the end where you talked about, let me just see if I can find it in my notes. You were really on a time crunch. Your problem was, hey, we're going to run out of money if we don't do something to get these women to these clinics in, you know, a certain period of time. So your problem was really you're facing a time constraint, as well as, you know, the workload that you had to do. So I would take a look at that again and see if you can glean that problem statement from out of there. I did think that your objectives, I would say you've got to do a little bit more work on those objectives, because they were still coming across as more output. And you did, which I thought was excellent, you did explain that, hey, this is how it happened, but what I would do is this. What I would do is create the objectives the way they should have been created in the first place. They don't know that you didn't do it that way. They're really concerned with what you did do. Right. Or what you learned from going through the RPI process. So I would go ahead and say something like, I'm just making this up out of thin air, but just to give you an idea of the style of an objective, it should be, remember, the who does what, for whom, by how much, and when. So it would be, you know, more than X percent of eligible Virginia women will visit one of the healthcare clinics by, you know, the end of the year, or something to that effect. That's how, so I would write it the way you would have had you learned, you know, had you had this knowledge at the time. Let's see, some of your evaluations, and forgive me, because I might have looked at the earlier presentation, Rakeem, so this might not be valid, but some of the evaluations were actually written like objectives. So I think if you go through your evaluations, like you said, increase family planning visits by 20%. Well, that's starting to sound more like an objective than evaluation. So then when you do get to the evaluation, you already have that. All you have to do is kind of put all your evaluations in a table and let those numbers pop so they can see exactly what you did and how that supported your strategies and objectives. Let's see, I had a couple of other notes. The publics, that was fine. I would redo the slides where you were combining tactics and strategies, specifically because you started with a tactic and then the strategy, and it should be the other way around. Okay. So I would definitely kind of work on that. And your problem should precede your research. So you have this problem, and now I'm going to go out and conduct research to see, you know, does this hypothesis hold? What do I need? What do I learn from the research to support my problem statement? So I would say you are about maybe 50 to 60% of the way there, as far as you've got the bulk of it on paper, you can see it. And now it's, let's rework mainly the objectives, the tactics, and the strategies area. I think that's where you need to kind of reformat a lot of that. And then the only other area I thought is in your evaluation, it sounds like you had some really good wins there. There were a lot of numbers, so it was a little hard for me to follow. You might want to think about another format, like a table or something. Or, you know, they're doing this in the NFL now, which I love, is this how it started and how it's going, you know, kind of like a, you know, two columns, you know, how we started and how it's going kind of thing that will allow all those really good numbers to pop. You know, we, you know, beat our estimates here. We got more impressions than we thought, something like that. You could also write a conclusion that would start with a statement like, overall, we met or exceeded our outputs, you know, and anything else that you learned during that would be a nice way to conclude it. Because they'll probably want to, they're definitely going to ask you on the panel, you know, what you would have done differently. If you had all the money in the world to spend, what would you have spent it on? That type of thing. But I think you did a great job, and you're off to a good start. Thanks for presenting tonight.
I appreciate it.
That's great. Kimberly, we do have another panel presentation we're going to go. And so I'm going to give sort of folks a little bit of a warning that we may go over our normal hour. So Kimberly, comments.
Well, I will be brief. I think Joan had all the high points. And Rakeem, again, you did a great job. You can really tell, which is also important, how passionate you are about the work and how important it is to you how important your work is to you. And so that was, I appreciated hearing that and feeling that through your presentation. You know, I think as Joan said, like you're at a state now where it's time to tweak. And I think that that's a fun place to be in, is that you have all the essential pieces right now. You just need to reorganize it in a bit based upon what you're learning through the course. And so just, I would just encourage you just to take what you have and, you know, kind of like look at what you're learning and see where you can make adjustments based upon what you see in the course and in the study guide. And again, specifically what Joan said around the objectives, make sure that your objectives are smart and they don't tie in your tactics. That is often, you know, it has something that we tend to do, but just make sure that you're focusing on what your objective is, and then you talk about your tactics and strategies later. And sometimes it's helpful to have, again, the tables, as Joan mentioned, where you have your objective, and then in a separate column, you might share then what your strategy or tactics are. And you might not even want to share that in the panel or on a slide, but if you have that kind of as a talking point as you're talking through or as you're thinking through how to discuss it, just to help organize your thoughts, that may be helpful. The other thing that I will share, and I did my panel presentation in person, and I know in the time of COVID things are a little different, but you talked about a lot of good kind of collateral pieces and with the billboards and things like that. You know, you can break up some of the text and help pace yourself and give the panel an opportunity to kind of see your work by adding some imagery. And that just kind of changes the tempo a bit and adds some different discussion points that aren't, you know, just about kind of the all about RPI and things like that. Some things that are a little bit more fun. But I think you're well on your way, and I would be more than happy to talk to you offline about some other areas where you can enhance your already a pretty strong presentation. So just let me know.
Thank you very much.
No, that's great. Excellent. So we do have another panel presentation coming up. And one of the other things we really want to point out is that the panel presentation, frequently, they don't want you to use slides. I don't know about the virtual panel presentations. They probably do want you to use slides for the virtual panel presentation. But it's important to check with your panel to find out what they want specifically. And so with that, we're going to go ahead and turn it over to Kim. Kim, go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Sure can. Go right ahead.
Okay. Hello. I'm Kim Bergeron, and I'm an independent practitioner, advertising, marketing, public relations. And I'm going to give you a very quick overview of my background because it's relative to what's about to come. I got my start in the newspaper industry when I was still in high school. I was in the production department, and now and then they let me write a feature story. And from college, I went straight to an advertising agency. I was a creative director there. 10 years, and then I went into government. So I've got a little bit of everything in there. And I was in government, the head of cultural and public affairs for 10 years, and then arts administration. That's all my passions, all rolled up into 40 years. So I'm not the spring chicken here. But my passion is the arts, and I've spent nearly half of my career advocating for arts and artists, and each facet of my career has led to that. And what I have relied on in the past is what I call intuitive public relations, part instinct, part psychology, part experience, incessant curiosity, and a never-ending quest to kind of connect the dots to find commonalities between seemingly unrelated people and events to lead to intriguing stories. So now that I'm pursuing my APR, I'm having to unlearn all of that, a lot of which I learned in the past. And so it's been an interesting journey. The case study I'm presenting today is an actual plan that I planned and executed in support of arts and artists on behalf of the North Shore Cultural Economy Coalition, an all-volunteer grassroots effort that I founded in 2009. Full disclosure, Much of the information presented herein was not part of a formally structured plan, but a development and adaptation in progress. And the reason for that is that I did every component of this by myself while working a full-time job. So whatever I thought of at night, late at night, got a crazy idea and added it. So this is not the way to do this, but it ended up working out okay. And with that being said, let's proceed. So the situation and analysis is that on an almost daily basis, artists are asked to donate their creative time and talent for a myriad of worthy causes, and even for-profit businesses who promise them great exposure in lieu of compensation. And in many cases, artists are giving away more work than they sell. The problem is that exposure doesn't pay the bills, and it rarely comes to fruition anyway. So adding to the challenges are the consistent cuts to the state's budget, and arts are always the first thing that are cut. And over the years, it has been significantly decreased from where it started even 10 years ago, and it continues to be reduced. So when the funding is reduced, the arts agencies reduce their services to artists in the community, and that impacts the community and the economy and its identity. So it's this really big cycle. It's the ecosystem includes community festivals and galas and art markets, exhibitions, community theater, arts and education, and everything that gives that community its unique identity. So what results is a critical need to advocate for arts and artists, generating awareness as to the role the cultural economy plays in the vitality economy and rich cultural fabric of the community. Next slide. So here's the research, and again, I've reconstructed this from memory, but as I was writing this and they were talking about a lot of this we know as we're going forward, I will admit that even with 40 years of experience, I was very intimidated by this whole process because you look at it and it's overwhelming. And once I started writing, it's like, well, I already know this stuff, you know? And so I kind of laid it all out. Is it all correct? Not necessarily, but it's the way it happened, the way that I presented it. So I was glad to see that whole intimidation was kind of removed. And now that I've got the stuff that I have to unlearn, what I need to focus on is the history of PR and a lot of the models that are currently used. But research, you can see it's broken down by categories. First, artists and arts administrators, and that's primary, informal, qualitative. It's talking with them about what they need and how we can help them and what they need the community to know. And so that was very helpful in just getting all that input, but it also reinforced that it's a universal problem. Community outreach meetings for primary, informal, and qualitative research. We invited the cultural economy stakeholders, arts patrons, and community members. Now, what is a cultural economy stakeholder? That is any business that provides any good or service to any arts organization or artist. You have community theaters who use hardware stores to buy the stuff to make their sets. When you have a gala, you hire a caterer who has to go to the grocery store to buy the groceries and a chef. You have linens for the tables. And if you start looking at all of the components of this, the cultural economy is a pretty broad spectrum of people that are impacted by all of this funding too. So the trickle-down effect really needs to be taken into consideration. And so by inviting them to the table, we gained a lot of insights as to what their thoughts were on artists and the values, and included that. Local arts administrators' input, primary, informal, and qualitative. And these are the folks that produce a lot of the events that utilize a lot of the artists. So discussing the challenges that they face in doing so and the crippling effect of the reduced funding also provided a lot of needed impact information. And then researching the arts, the resources available, including national trends and economic impact stats. Secondary, formal, qualitative, Americans for the Arts is the nation's foremost arts advocacy agent, and they have a wealth of information on just about every topic imaginable. And so members have access to all of that research. And one of the things they have that's really amazing is a return on investment data base. And you can plug in your city and your zip code, and it pulls up the return on investment for every dollar invested in the arts. And in most communities, depending on the size, it's going to be anywhere from $16 to $27. For every dollar invested by the community. That is how much comes back in the way of people spending when they go to dinner first, when they buy a fancy outfit, when they come and stay in hotels, they hit up the bars afterwards, they bring food to their to the events, so of outdoor concerts. So having that data was very useful, because the key to a lot of this is legislative funding. The folks who sit at the Capitol are the ones who make the decisions about how much money is going to be invested from the state's budget in the arts. So that's a really critical key that I'll talk a little bit later about how I tapped into that. Then I needed to research Louisiana's economic impact stats, which were secondary, formal, and qualitative. The officer of the lieutenant governor maintains all of that information that's pulled from grants every year, because you have to do a final grant report when your arts funded program is completed. And so that was really useful, but they were also going to be a key player in this, because the lieutenant governor's office oversees the 9 arts districts in the state, and each district has its own official state arts agency, and all of the information is disseminated through those agencies, and even the grants are disseminated through those agencies, and it's proportionately rationed out to the 9 districts. So research on how other communities and arts administrators handle this, and this is secondary, informal, and qualitative. And again, reviewing the Americans for the Arts Library and various online searches, because there's a plethora of stuff out there if you research. And a lot of it talks about how artists are always asked to donate their time and talent, musicians too, free for all of these galas. Well, that's their paychecks. And every time an artist is asked to do that, you're asking them to take food off their table to support your event, without giving consideration to the fact that this is how they make their living. And one time at an art exhibit, I asked the audience how many people would give up their paycheck for a week for their favorite cause. And about a dozen hands went up. And then I asked how many people would give up their paycheck every week for a different cause. And not a single hand went up. And I said, that's what y'all are asking artists to do, because there are so many causes, they have to learn to say no. And artists have a hard time saying no. So part of this event was driven behind that, to empower artists to say, I cannot do this. And they can pick and choose who they want to donate to. And then post-event surveys, which was critical. A lot of the information I'm presenting is going to evolve around the festival that was created for this event, because it involved artists and it involved advocacy and it involved the messaging that we were getting out. So I emailed that to all the artists after the event. So the problem statement: research reinforced what we already knew, that the challenges artists have faced throughout their careers, there remains a critical need to advocate for the support of creative professionals, including appropriate compensation for their time and talent, and generating awareness as to the intrinsic and economic impact that artists bring to communities. So, and that kind of focuses on the what's in it for me as a community member, as much as it focuses on what's in it for the artists. So, and that's an advertising thing, you know, that's what people want to hear. How do they benefit from what you're doing? Next slide, please. And the goal: communities will gain a greater understanding of the importance of supporting arts and artists as vital components of the cultural economy and community identity. Next slide. So here are audiences, and I think I may need to research more about splitting audiences, defining audiences versus publics. So, but these are the audiences and the rationale. Artists and arts organizations, internal and external, working together to promote unified messaging. Municipal and parish elected officials. These are the guys that give the okay for local festivals, and a lot of them have money in the budget for arts and arts programming. And the government that I worked for had a cultural affairs department, and we did concerts in the park and art exhibits. We had an art exhibit in the city hall, which was amazing. State government, cultural division, again, they were a great source for economic impact stats, and they were also our partner to distribute a lot of the information once it was ready to agencies around the state. Legislators, as I mentioned before, the legislators are the keys to the funding. And one of the things that I have learned in the past is that the more you get people involved, the more likely they are to be open to the message. So in the past, I have actually invited legislators and community business leaders and local government officials and media personnel to become artists for a day, and paired them up with local artists, and they created artwork. And one of the years we did this, it was ceramic bowls. And the reason I did that was because that required three coats of paint, and they could come in, and it didn't require a lot of artistic talent. They could splash colors. But while they were putting on those three coats of paint and waiting for that paint to dry, glaze, not paint, I had 3 hours of uninterrupted time to talk about economic impacts of the arts. And so it worked. We had one guy who arrived, one senator, and he said he had 1 hour, he had a meeting at 4, and he would have to leave. And I said, we'll take what you give us. Well, the clock rolled around, and it's 5 to 4, and he picked up the phone and called his administrative assistant, and he said, postpone my 5 o'clock, my 4 o'clock. And he did that again the next hour. He ended up staying that night, and he came back on the weekend and finished his bowl. And it was this really elaborate production. But he, and then we auctioned these off. He bought his own bowl. So every time he walked in his front door where that bowl was sitting, he was reminded of that experience. And that's something that when people experience something, you reignite. It was like watching kids painting, finger painting. You know, they were a bunch of kids having a good time. And I think a lot of them forgot how to do that. Well, when the state budget rolled around, he added a $25,000 line item for programming for our city, arts programming. So it works. So engaging them has always been one of the key things I do. Every year in May, it's Arts Advocacy Month, and all the arts agencies from around the state descend upon the Capitol, and we pull our legislators out and say, you know, this is what we need. This is the return on investment in our community. We need to make sure you don't forget us. Well, they hear so many of this because they've got so many organizations pulling them out and giving their stats, and everybody's got great stats and great stories. So the challenge becomes how yours stands out. And I'll get back to that in a minute. But again, Americans for the Arts, an invaluable partner, and they are the nation's largest and most respected advocacy organization. So they were a critical component of this. The cultural economy stakeholders, we wanted to remind them that they are ambassadors for the arts because they benefit from the arts as much as everybody else. And then community members. These are the people who come out to the festivals, who enjoy the city art exhibits and all of the events that take place throughout the year. And we need to make sure that they remember how much they enjoy those and let them know that it's not just something they enjoy. It's economic impact. The arts can attract businesses, new businesses, and new families to come to the community. Next slide, please. Objectives, following the success of a small community-based Shop Local Artist Weekend event in 2016, the North Shore Cultural Economy Coalition focused on the launch of a week-long Shop Local Artist Week advocacy effort to be celebrated statewide in 2017 and nationwide in 2019. And it didn't happen this way. What happened was I did the Shop Local Artist Weekend because we do shop small and shop local. And it's like, why are we not supporting the artists? So when I did that first weekend and I watched people come in and interacting with the artists and kids being read to by local authors, I questioned why weren't we doing this on a statewide level. So that led to the statewide level. And when the statewide version took place, I questioned why are we not doing this on a national level? So that became my mission. So the objective was to draw 8 to 10 markets in the inaugural year statewide, and then 20 or more markets in the year of the national launch in 2019, supporting arts and utilizing events as platforms to advocate for the support of artists and arts organizations.
Next and slide. Kim, I'm yes. going to actually interrupt, and I'll tell you why. When candidates do a panel presentation, they should expect questions from the panel. So now that you've shared the situation, you've shared your research, very well organized, you've shared your audiences, which are extensive, and you have your objective here, what I'd like to do is to ask for both Joan and Kimberly to give you some questions. So okay, Kimberly, do you want to try start first?
I'm not hearing Kimberly.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I apologize. I don't really have any questions at the moment. I was just taking notes.
Okay.
But I will say, you know, that it's been really helpful, all the context that you've provided and the storytelling. It really helps an uninformed or an unknowledgeable audience understand kind of what your situation is and what you were trying to achieve. I'll also share, you asked about, you know, the difference between audience and publics. And you, the audience is composed of groups of publics. So just you're aware of that difference. But again, there's so much going on. That you've shared that I'm grateful for the context.
Joan, I hope it's not too much.
Joan, would you like to, I mean, sure. On a panel, you can expect your panelists to give you, right in the middle of your presentation, to give you a question or ask or get some understanding of exactly what's going on. So Joan, do you want to see if you can do that?
Sure, I was gonna ask under objectives, can you sort of reframe that? How would you reframe that in the process and the RPI process of how we're taught to form an objective? So who is doing something? What is the behavior?
The North Shore Cultural Economy Coalition is focused on increasing the awareness of the value of arts in the community and the importance of supporting artists.
So who's going to be more aware, Kim? Who are we trying to, whose behavior are we trying to influence? The North Shore Cultural Economy?
It's multifaceted, and that's I probably for the purpose of this presentation should have micro-focused on one, but they are all equally important. The legislators, those who make the rules about the funding, and then the public who are basically abusing artists by asking for free artwork all the time. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of, it is a pretty broad objective or multiple objectives.
So what you could do, Kim, is really you should tie your audiences to your objectives. So if there's a different objective for, say, the government community, the coalition, then that objective should be tied to that specific audience. Now, obviously, you can't, if you have about six or seven different publics there, so it would make your presentation too long. You can pick one or two of them and just let the panel know that from here on out, I'm going to focus just on the artists and art organizations, and here's the objective for that, and here's the strategies and tactics there for that particular one. So yeah, I would definitely work on that part. Audiences. I think you have a lot of information, and as Kim said, really great context, great delivery, and great presentation skills. I think what I'm not seeing quite yet is how all this fits neatly into RPI. So I think what you have is an excellent start. You've got everything down. Now, how does this fit into RPI? One other thing I would suggest is not to put your problem second, but put your problem before the research. And then you can even eliminate that statement that you had about research reinforcing the challenges that artists face. Your research should make that apparent because you have a problem. That's what the research shows.
Okay.
So first, and so I would just say there's a need to advocate for the support of creative professionals. Boom. And whatever you said after that. And then here's the research.
Okay.
And then and Kim, you go in.
Yeah, and Kim, your enthusiasm. Of course, I sit on a couple of arts boards myself, so your enthusiasm is really lovely. It's fantastic. What we really need to do in terms of the RPI, and this is a conversation. When you're presenting your plan, they will likely stop you, and they will likely say, "How does your goal align with your objectives?" And so, for example, look at your goal for a moment. Communities will gain greater understanding of the importance of supporting arts and artists as a vital component of the community. That's, you know, that's a lovely goal. It's also generally you try to figure out if there's a perception issue. Like you mentioned in your problem and you mentioned in your discussion that the government leaders are abusing the artist community and they don't really understand the economics of the artist community. I don't really see that in this goal.
Okay, so it's the public, not the I probably wasn't clear in that. It's the general public that every Tom, Dick, and Harry asked for artists to give free artwork for every event under the sun.
Okay, and then you're doing, and every once in a while, people know that I channel Fern Bonney, and she would say you're trying to do way too much here. You're going to ultimately what happens if you try to do so much, you end up not doing anything. And I'm not saying that this isn't absolutely valuable, but it's going to be difficult for you to actually implement a plan like this because there's so much in it. If you focus on one audience, if the government is the problem, focus a communication plan just on the government. Move the needle in terms of their perception of the arts or their understanding of the economics of the arts. And that way you can move that needle forward. There's a grander goal of enhancing the arts in the community, but it's better to really focus on something that you can achieve.
Okay.
So I hate to do this to you, Kim, because we had a lot of talk with our first plan, but it is very valuable. Do you have a date for your panel presentation?
I do not. It was supposed to be in November, and then we had five hurricanes. It kind of derailed everything.
Okay. So what I would recommend is take some of the feedback that you're getting from Joan, some of the feedback from Kim. We also have a lot of feedback in the chat area. And what would be great, are you also working with an APR, a mentor or a coach?
I'm not. I need to do that. I need to connect with one. And for the record, all of this has already been implemented. So, but I was dead as a dog after it was done. and the long story short is that we got the statewide initiative passed without opposition. And then we got Americans from the Arts picked this up, and it is now a national event. So
that is fantastic.
I didn't get to that part yet, but so it did work. But there is a lot of information here, and there's a lot more that wasn't even included in the presentation. It was a lot of stuff, and it's kind of 2 years compressed into 15 minutes.
Right. I heard, I think, Kimberly wanting to make a comment, or Joan?
I was just saying, Kim, I'm happy to help if you need someone to review your panel presentation.
I will take you up on that. Thank you.
I'm very happy to help with that. I think, you know, this is a good example for everyone on the call, because I think so often we feel like we have to tell our whole story in the panel presentation, and we don't. And you know, all that you've accomplished can be a springboard to sharing kind of one aspect of the public relations strategy or initiative that you launched. And there are different ways that you can go about telling your story through the panel presentation, and so that you don't feel like you have to put everything, you know, tell everything that happened. And
it's a lot.
That's great. And one other thing, Joan, is that one of the things the panel really wants to know: do you understand the process? So you can't really, in a panel presentation, even in a 2-hour panel presentation, tell them everything you know. But what you can do is illustrate through the planning process a particular understanding of the ARPI. Joan, do you have any final comments for Kim?
Yeah, I would say if you could trim it down to one or two audiences and do exactly what Michael said, your passion will come through no matter what. If you were talking about, if you had an audience of you know, inanimate objects, your passion would come through. So I think you're good to go there. I would say trim it down a couple audiences, and then go back through your ARPI and then fit it into the strategies, tactics, and then the remainder of the presentation. And I think you'll do just fine. But I think you have a really good start. You've got more than you need. It's easier to trim than it is to try to put more in. So good job. We're so glad you presented tonight. It's important. It helps everybody learn.
Thank you. I appreciate all the feedback.
Great, Kim. We're going to send you the comments that we received. And also, we really encourage you to do that refining. Work with Kimberly, work with other APRs, refine that plan so that it's really laser focused. And that's when the panel will really understand that you know your stuff. So thank you all very much for being with us here this evening. Remember that we want you to keep up the effort. We do have two more panel presentations next week. We are starting the summer cohort and we'll be doing that. You'll be receiving an open house invitation about January 19th. And so we do look forward to each one of you. If you're getting close to taking the examination, be sure to go to the completion activity in the online study course. There are some additional resources that we want you to look at before you take your computer-based examination. Thank you all very much. I'm really happy that you were all with us. We look forward to seeing you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.